Good evening. I call order the Monroe Public Schools Board of Education work session. Today is Tuesday, December 9th, 2025, and the time is 5:30. Jamie, can we have roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Hunt.
Here.
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 Okay, can we all please stand for the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I guess I will say this. Before we begin, please note that this meeting is being live streamed and recorded. There are two cameras in use this evening, one focused on the Board of Education, and another one may be used during public comment or presentations. By participating in this meeting, you acknowledge that you may be captured on video. Thank you for your understanding and for joining us tonight. Next is discussion items, and I'll turn it over to Superintendent Shaw.
All right, well, thank you very much. So tonight, our first item is school finance overview, and we have a presentation for you up on the screen. And in your pack of material, you'll also have to see the presentation for board members. So Cassie, it's all yours, ma'am.
All right, thank you, Mr. Shaw. Tonight, I am going through a general fund financial overview, which was requested to be held by the board. The first item I'm going to discuss is the different levels of detail within the budget. And regardless of the level on here, it still has to stay within the board approved allocation for those functions. The board approves at the function level, which is broad categories for your revenues and expenditures. There is also district department levels, which is an allocation that's overseen by a central office administrator for a specific area of the district. Our staffing would be in that area as well, and any district-wide level initiatives like curriculum that is for all grade levels. And then the lowest, I don't want to say lowest, but another portion is a building or department level, which those allocations are overseen by a specific buildings administrator or a department administrator. And those would be building level needs and initiatives that only that building does. And then in addition to the presentation, I provided the final budget amendment, which showed the district using an estimated almost $3 million of fund balance in 24-25. If you look at the third page in, that'll kind of give you everything all at once. These are also in a format that is recommended by the state. And I just wanted to show what the board had approved. And when I do the final amendment in June, that is my best estimate of what we're going to spend, but I have to have it all prepared before everything is complete. So we have always budgeted on a conservative side. We match our grant revenues with grant expenditures, but we may not have all that grant activity happen by the end of June.
Is this something that was required by the state as part of the financial stress plan?
No, sir. This is our normal budget process.
I haven't seen that before, so I was just wondering if that was
the case.
Thank you.
And then I also included the 25-26 initial budget, which I have to use the ending fund balance that I projected for the previous year when I start this budget. And this is just to show what was approved by the board and showing that we were using fund balance again. And the state, and because of the medical issue I had, I wasn't here at that meeting, so I don't know what Mr. Shaw said when he was presenting on my behalf. But in previous discussions that I've had with the board, the state early warning threshold is when your fund balance is at 5% or less of your expenditures, which this shows that being very, very close and at that threshold.
So which number is showing that? Are we looking at this sheet?
Yes. So your ending fund balance at the budget that was approved at the end of June for the 25-26 shows an ending fund balance of $1.5 million. It's on the very last page of that.
Okay. Oh, I had to. I'm looking at the
first know, there's
sheet.
There's two sets.
I'll just keep moving along here. Yep.
Okay, and that's
at 5%. You said
I know it's within that threshold. I don't have. I apologize. I don't have the number right in front of me. I can.
But it's not less than 5%.
It's not going into deficit, which would be less than fund balance. I can tell you what it is.
It would have to be higher than 5%.
5% isn't deficit. Deficit is less than zero of your fund balance. So
okay. That was a dull moment.
So that is about 2.3% of your expenditures. 1.5 million is about 2.3%. So it's within that 5% threshold, which is why one of the reasons, which I'll explain later in my presentation regarding the state's early warning system, but that is one of the data points that they look at. And why we're having those, Mr. Shaw, Mr. Heck has joined on an occasion of having these monthly meetings, submitting monthly financial reports to the state.
Just remember, we're catching up.
Yes.
We're not
I understand.
So they're just using, remember, all the, in those meetings, they're just using the data that was already presented to you.
I understand
so
that.
There's not new data.
No. My question is, this budget started in June, July 1st, mm-hmm. essentially.
Yes.
Okay. So we're July, August, September, October, November, December, that would mm-hmm. be 6 months in.
Right.
So do you have a report, and I would assume the answer is yes, that shows how much of the amount that has been budgeted has been utilized in each of these categories? For example, you had Dave got allowed $5 million because he just always gets money. And, you know, he has $5 million used throughout the year. So we're 2.5 months in. I mean, halfway through that, he should be right around the 2.5 million mark.
That is not the case for school districts. So it's not just because we're 6 months in that he's spent half, like any line item may not be halfway spent. That's part of the differences with school funding. Because not only do we not receive all our revenue equally throughout the year, our expenditures also vary throughout the year. So while, based on your example, like the technology department, let's say, had $5 million. So that doesn't mean that he'll spend 6 months, half that expenditures in those 6 months. It depends on what he needs, when, how much of that allocation is for people, what hours they're working, if they're hourly, if they're a salary spread, if they take insurance, if they don't take insurance.
Yeah, but those are once the people are hired, those are already built in.
Right, but for example, an hourly person, our payroll is in arrears. So our pay that we get on, that we are getting tomorrow, is only through hours worked through November 25th.
Right.
So then that's reflecting in December hours that were worked back in November. So there is a lag time. And then when we're closing out in June, we also have to accrue the teacher summer spread salaries because the amounts they're being paid in July and August are for work that was performed during the school year. So there's a lot of factors that go into, so it's not a, well, we're halfway through, we should be at spending half or less.
You understand my thought process,
right, I understand.
Though, because, you know, obviously we want to put stop
right.
gap measures or
sure.
some kind of measures into
sure.
place so that we don't, you know.
So some things that might help, too, when this budget gets built, it's built on the very beginning is
and
with an unknown of the fund balance that we're going to end.
If I can get through that, not to cut
I'm
you
sorry.
Off, if I can
that's
get through my presentation, yep. I've got some of those items
okay.
forthcoming that may be helpful.
Okay.
And I am working on a budget amendment because, as Mr. Shaw alluded to, and in a slide or two I'll discuss as well, how I'm building the budget and the factors that go into that.
Okay, perfect. Make sure I know what page you're on.
Sure. Well, I'm done with that separate thing, so we'll just be on the other presentation now.
Thanks, Cassie.
And this is page 4. This is just the overview of the budget process guidelines. So the state has guidelines in the school accounting manual as far as what is contained on those budget resolutions and the format of the data that I provide to the board for consideration.
She's running late.
And then, in addition, the district has several policies, which I referenced on here, that also I have to conform to and also conform to the state regulations. So I'm not just putting numbers on paper. There is a process in place, and there are guidelines that I have to follow. The initial budget, I have to have that prepared, and the board has to approve that before July 1st each year in accordance with the state statute. So that means I have to have information to you before I know a great deal of information that impacts our budget. The state budget is typically not approved, even though I've heard for the 15 years I've been in school finance that, hey, this is the year we're going to have one in June. A lot of times, and this year was quite unique as far as the federal grant allocations, those aren't always available at the end of the year. Our pupil count is estimated. Our staffing levels are estimated. While we do know typically a good number of the people that are leaving, there is a lot of flux over the summer. And while we know who's leaving, we might not know who's replacing them. And I do like a blended, I don't always estimate on the low end of the salary. I do some low, some high, because some positions you can't, it wouldn't be fair to estimate for the board that all 10 new teachers that we're hiring are going to be BA1 when, you know, some might have some experience, some may be an MA. And I have to use the estimated ending fund balance, which, as you saw when the audit was presented, in my budget, I estimated us going in almost $7.3 million, but we actually only went in just over $5 million. So that's a $2 million swing. But I can't reflect that when I have to present the budget to you because I'm not closed out for the year yet. So that initial budget is, and I think I say this just about every time I present it, it's my best shot in the dark with the information and estimates that I have at that time, which is leads into why we have to do a mid-year budget amendment.
But that's not unique to the system. That's unique to education.
Right.
I don't understand.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, everybody.
It's not just
a
Monroe
that.
Public Schools, but
yeah.
That's
okay.
But that leads into my next slide of why we have, because technically speaking, for the state, you don't have to do budget amendments. You can say this is my budget, that's what I'm sticking with, and then not do an amendment until the very end of the year, which would be a disservice when you have information that could update things in the middle of the year. And Monroe has historically always done at least one mid-year budget amendment. Historically in February or March, and it updates the information that I have all that time, which would be your state budget. We would have our fall pupil count. Hopefully we would have all our federal and state grant allocations. I have our actual ending fund balance. And then I would know some of the other projects or changes that have occurred since the budget was adopted.
So wouldn't that be the time that would be where we would say, okay, we do have money for this, and we may want to think before we do some of these approvals for funds based on, you never know what might come up. Isn't that about the time to do it? Because those numbers are more real for at least the next few months, right?
And yes and no. Yes, in part, because we have some more accurate information, but there are still things in flux. And that's discussions that we have at the cabinet level, that we have with the building administrators about things that they're still looking to do. And some of the funds are restricted, so it can't just be, well, I think we should do X with instead of doing Y. Sometimes if you have a grant that's for Y, you can only use it for Y. Yeah. You can't use it for X, even though, well, gee, I'd like to. So it's not as school accounting is very specific, and I have a whole binder that gives me how I have to code things and what's restricted, what's unrestricted, what can be used for certain things, what can't. So it's not like someone's personal budget necessarily. It's very complex. And when I looked the other day, when I pulled up my spreadsheet, there's over 6,000 line items in the general fund budget alone for expenditures. That's not even including the revenues. So that is a lot of line items, which is why it's presented to the board and recommended to present at the board at that function level. Because to get down into those 6,000 line items would be very time consuming, and I don't know that it would be a valuable use of everyone's time.
I would concur with that. What I'm looking at is, moving forward, how we can make the best use of our vote and the best use of what, because the board holds the ultimate fiscal responsibility. And so it's, to me, I look at it, and I'm sure every board member looks the same. There's a shared responsibility here. You have a shared responsibility with the building, with the administrators, with the cabinet, with us. And how does that become a more shared responsibility rather than just checking the box and say, okay, go on. So, you know, that's where I'm looking at is, you know, so I know when I vote now, like,
right.
I know.
So is your ask to have more detail when I'm presenting the budget amendment, or are you asking for more information before the budget amendment comes to you? I guess is what I would need clarification on what your ask is.
When you all come to us, so when you bring the budget to me, mm-hmm. you say, hey, Darla, I am the professional. This is my job. This is what I do. I'm bringing it to you. Take a look at it. I go, gee, Cassie, that looks great. You know, we got money coming in. We got money going out. It sounds like a system that's operating. You've adjusted for those things you didn't account for, and life is good. What I'm looking at are those when they come before the board, and we had a lot of high dollar amounts coming through at one point in time. You know, when those are coming through, I need to know, I don't want to check the box on those like I do for the budget and the amendment budget.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
So you're asking for more detail when certain things are coming before the board as far as the funding?
I think it might.
Or I just want to make sure that I.
So I think what maybe, if I could step in right here, is more about when we planned last year, mm-hmm. was this item already pre-built into the budget?
Okay.
Or not.
Okay.
For example,
that
okay.
right. That
yeah.
I mean, that's really the question.
Yeah.
Did we already
sure.
pre-build that in or not?
Sure.
Or when we do the budget amendment, going, okay, we're going to have to add in this, and here's why mm-hmm. we need to add in this.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
at the same time, because we're trying to control expenditures, we've removed this one item too.
And you're 100%
so
right.
So I think that's really where your question is.
Scare you in my mind sometimes, but it does happen. But that's exactly it. So
right.
when we approve the budget,
right.
you know, if it's outside of that, if things weren't considered, if the cost
yep.
of it was higher than what we thought it was going to be, what's the impact of that?
Correct.
And I
so
do.
So when we make that decision, we can.
Yep.
Yep. And I do try and make a slide when I do the workshop on the budget amendment that shows some of the higher level, higher dollar value changes, mm-hmm. Both positive and negative. But I can certainly, when things are coming before the board, make sure I have the context if I already had that in the budget or if it's something additional, if that would be helpful.
And the impact of that.
Sure.
For,
yeah.
Thank you.
And I know some of the more recent things like the HMH into Reading and some of the other purchases were also grant funded, which that would be an in and an out.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a grant listed, just know that's money coming in and money going out for that grant.
Net zero.
But I think it would also be beneficial because we don't always do grants in one lump sum.
Sure.
So they're
mm-hmm.
pieced out. So you mm-hmm. could be like, hey, yep. this is 3/4 of the budget. Because sometimes you'll be like, that was the grant. And I'll be like, okay, that grant money's gone. And then it comes up and I see the same numbers again. And there are numbers and letters and all
yeah.
that kind of stuff. And I'll be like, I thought we already used that. So in that context, you know, mm-hmm. where are we at
yep.
on the
yep.
the expenditure of those funds, because they still are funds that need to be allocated because they have a range of things that you can
mm-hmm.
do with them.
Yes.
Yeah. I think one of the key things that Cassie had shared, though, too, is when it comes to grants, it is, I'm going to have you restate it because I think it's an important one because it's there about, it's already, it's all
baked
budgeted.
In.
Yeah.
It's baked
not,
in.
Yep. So when I get a grant allocation, I take So part of what I'm working on the budget amendment now is we, the 35N and 35M grants, we didn't know if we, when we were planning the budget for 25-26, we didn't know if we were going to get an allocation or not. So obviously I didn't budget anything. So part of the amendment is pulling in what the state approved for the expenditures. So pulling in the revenue and pulling in the expenditures, which will net zero, but those will be changes to the budget. Yep.
And I think there's also opportunities there where because that grant, you may say this $50,000, we want to use it for this, but there's also that $50,000 could be used in these three categories, yep. You know, and saying, hey, you know, we're just giving it out there. So those are just information mm-hmm. that's beneficial sure. to us rather than me just.
Yep. It's kind of like, I think if I don't know if you have it in here. If you don't, I know you can do this. So for like example, Title I. Title I is a major grant for mm-hmm. us. And we have to, because of all of our buildings, we have to do an allocation amount mm-hmm. per building. Mm-hmm. And then the uses that they do, if you could just spend a minute, because that one's mm-hmm. that's one of our big, and it's a complex one, that there's not a lot of freedom. Mm-hmm. Just like our Title IIA, there's not a lot of freedom inside of that.
And I'll do an overview. So depending on the grant, some grants you have leeway. An example would be, well, it's a poor example at this point because the 31AA, I said it was
okay.
A poor.
We know what you're talking about.
In previous years, you didn't have to submit an itemized budget. They just said you're getting X dollars. It can be used for X things. You have leeway to do however you feel would meet the guidelines of your allowable expenditures. You don't have to submit it for approval. But there's other grants, like Mr. Shaw mentioned, Title I, all the titles actually, 1, 2, 3, and 4. You have to submit specific itemized details and dollar amounts, and you have to adhere to that. And the same goes for some of our adult ed grants. If I say teaching supplies, pencils, highlighters, notebooks, and paper clips, I can't get Post-its because I didn't say Post-its.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, well, I can only get
it's very specific.
What I put. Right. So now I've learned I don't just put pen.
Can you just put office supplies?
Mm-mm, nope. They want examples. So I've learned I don't put pens or pencils. I put writing utensils, paper. I make it a little bit more general but specific enough that they will approve the item. Mm-hmm. So there's different variables. So for Title I, each building has to submit very specific information that Mr. Duncan at the middle school and I enter into the consolidated app, and the state approves it. If they put, I want to use it for this, and then later decide, I'm not going to do this, I want to do that, mm-hmm. if it's at this time of the year, we haven't submitted, well, the amendment window hasn't opened, and so they could change it, but they can't buy that until we've submitted it and the state has approved it. So there's variances with the grants as far as the leeway that you have or don't have. If we have to submit an itemized budget, then what we submit is what we can spend it on unless we have the opportunity to amend it. But there are some grants that you do have more leeway where it just has to meet the standards of allowable expenditures. And then moving back to the budget amendment stuff, the final amendment occurs in late June. It's my final update to align with actual and projected remaining spending. Everything is on our fiscal year, July 1st to June 30th. Even in June, I have some unknowns. I may not know how much of the repairs or projects will be done by June 30th, but I estimate to the best of my ability. We order summer supplies before the start of the summer semester because we don't want kids showing up the second week of July without the things that they need. And the grants, as I said before, I budget those equal revenues and expenditures in full, even though we do often carry over some items to the following year. And they're the title grants, for example, you can spend from July 1st to the following September 30th. So you have that 3-month overlap between fiscal years to spend.
So when it comes to grants, you're the grant person?
For the most part.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, is the school allowed an unlimited number of grants that you can apply for, or are they very limited in scope in what you can do? That's why I asked who was the person in charge.
So I am the level 5 administrator in Nexus, which means I am the person that can open and then submit any state-held grant opportunities. And there are a plethora in every state aid budget of grant opportunities. Sometimes they're available to school districts. Sometimes they're only available to ISDs. Sometimes they're only available to community colleges. So depending on what the grant is, if I see, usually when I see an opportunity come open, if I'm not sure if it was something that would be useful to us, if it's curriculum related, I pass the information along to Mr. Malalepsi, Mrs. Joseph, and Mrs. Wiley to say, hey, this is coming up. We have this window of time. Is this something that we could use for something that we have in the works?
I say that because one of the random things I do is watch the Michigan grants that come out just to see what is available out there for resources that someone may need. And that's why I was wondering if you had someone in place. Because there's a lot of random stuff that comes up, and you're like, man, that's like...
And just in the past year or two, the state has created this grant repository, which you can kind of look at and see if something is open. Because you're not wrong. It is a bit of a number and alphabet soup. Everything's a number and a letter. That's how you can tell if it's state or federal. State has letters and numbers. Federal is usually just letters. So between the other executive directors and I, we keep an eye out for grants that are forthcoming.
Just curious, because I'll see them pop up, and I'll just wonder how they get there.
And I subscribe to the state... like email blasts about grants and things.
And when they come out, that you're made aware of.
Yep. And each year when they pass the budget, you have your standard ones that are automatic, that you don't have to do anything for, that's automatically coming to you. And then you have the competitive ones that will pop out. So example, like the 35M, that was a competitive one that we had to put ourselves into. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see those, they'll pop in there, like, okay, the ones that the state gives us that we know we can apply for or not.
So that's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. And like he said, some are automatic. We just, like, I don't have to apply for 31A, the at-risk grant. We just get that based on our pupil information that's submitted for the previous year. But some we do have to apply for, and if you miss that deadline, the state is going to tell you the deadline was the deadline. Mm-hmm. Yes. And my next slide is just a few things that we've used fund balance to pay for in the last several years, where we didn't receive any funding per se for those specific things.
But that's what the fund balance is for.
Correct. But I just, part of the trend that the state saw was that we've been using some of our fund balance. And so because that was part of the trend that got us on the early warning list, I just wanted to provide that information.
But the Trojan home build, that is a circulating fund, right? What goes out ends up coming back in, right?
Yes. From a timing perspective.
Yeah.
For the most part, yes.
But it's not.
However.
Like the turf field, from my understanding,
that went out.
Me. Was a total go out.
Yes.
Which was a different category than, and wage reopeners, those are set dollar amounts that are paid.
Those were where in the 2022-2023 year, those groups listed came to the administration and board and requested to have their contract that was already settled reopened.
Oh, I was sitting out there.
Yes.
Right when I started.
Yes.
Oh, I started in 23.
Yes.
Yeah. It was about the same time.
We were all sitting.
It was about the same time. Mm-hmm. I remember that now.
Yes. So those were.
But that's older stuff.
Right. But that still has an effect.
It's a pattern. Mm-hmm. That's what she's saying when we look at what the.
So when we see a pattern, this is where my thought process is going. And I'm just pointing it out because it's just a linear thought process here that if if we identify a pattern coming up, we maybe wouldn't have spent so much money maybe on all of the office furniture, even though it's beautiful and pretty.
Right. I understand what you're saying in a sense. However, once the standard was set, and I see now I left off Custer. So Custer was the first area to receive the secured entry. Mm-hmm. And when the...
That was bond money, though, wasn't it?
The furniture is not allowable for the bond. The construction...
You're talking about the furniture for the
correct.
Bond entry. Yeah.
So once that model of how we purchased the furniture for that building, that set the bar as far as what we needed to do when each other, every other building received their secure vestibule.
And we all said, okay.
Right. Once it's set, you can't walk it back and say, well...
But you could.
You could, but that would much create some optics that I don't think would be beneficial.
It would also be inequitable between buildings.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you may not be able to remodel every room of your house at the same time, especially if you start with the kitchen and you have a budget. So, you know, that would be what you'd look at. It wouldn't be a no never. It would be, okay, we're going to have to do this in a fashion for which everybody can get it. It's just going to be a time frame.
Yeah, change the timing.
And
in that one, it changed out only because, like, who was at the table first? It worked out better. Mm-hmm. If I can take 1 second on the Trojan build. So the CTE, why that sits there is the home sales have generated revenue, and so it ends up going into fund balance. The CTE building out there, the storage building, is still being paid for, and it probably has, like, I want to say probably two more house sales, and it's fully paid for. So it's still, we've paid for that big building out of that fund balance, so there's monies that are going to come back in. So it'll add back in from those sales.
So if I can tack on there. So when it was approved to do that storage building at Monroe High, it was identified then that what was in the assigned fund balance from those home builds was not sufficient, but the agreement was that as the future builds were sold, that money wouldn't start showing back up for them to use for additional projects until the fund balance had been repaid.
I remembered that. Yep. And it was because at that point, we're all like, hey, we got tons of money sitting there.
Right.
Because the ESSER money was still flowing around. You had all this other money sitting there. Everything was good.
And then,
you know, so, of course, at that time, you're like, hey, why not?
Well, and to compound it, when we do a two-year build like we did, which it's, although it is more feasible for Mr. Bell to coordinate everything over 2 years, you have a year where you're putting out expenses, and then you have a second year where you're finishing up those expenses, and then you get the revenue back
but
in.
They're only a couple $100,000. I mean, those things aren't over $300,000, so it's not
but
like you're talking $800,000-$900,000, yeah. But I
but
understand the context.
Right.
Yes.
And the CTE, the
furniture play more.
The CTE side, remember this, though, too, is that The reason we did it, because we were building fund balance, and the problem became is that there's so much volunteerism with the CT, with the home builds, is kind of hard for us to take and keep all that money for the district, because here the CTE department and the builders and others coming and doing a lot of the work for free. Mm-hmm. So we said, okay, we got to put it back into CTE. And so that's why that money just gets reused.
We all supported that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, right. No, I'm just saying that that was the mechanism for it. So that way we didn't want to have the volunteerism and others go away if all of a sudden we kept the money.
Yeah.
You're making
I thought the turf
money.
Was, the field was like only 1.7 million.
Oh, no, it was almost 2 million.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
But you roll into the turf sits there. The wage reopener is roughly 1 million. And you start rolling down through
the
there.
Field and the track probably portion. It feels like the field.
The field and the track was all it was all built in one part of the project.
Like
it was in phases,
prices, so.
Yeah,
like
but
the
it was.
1.2 Darla might be referring to was
yeah.
the field.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the track.
Yeah. And then the drainage.
Yes. All those stuff you have to do.
Thing. I don't know what the word for it is. I apologize.
Should we ask how much all that furniture came to? Or should we just let that one go?
So it's. But remember,
only because you're throwing out numbers here.
We put those in there. The other thing that's not in there is a reflection of even like last year, budgetary-wise, we were expecting the 31AA money to come in over $1 million, and it came in at a half million. And we weren't expecting until they all of a sudden they changed that.
For 31AA?
31AA, 2 years ago. It was over $1 million we had received, and then remember the
so in the 24-25 budget that came out after we had already approved our budget,
a portion of the entire
it cut our allocation in half.
Our pupil foundation was zero, so we those two things come over $1 million. So if you look at if we're looking at it from a straight fund balance side, between the football field, the wage reopeners, and just that, you're talking about $3 million.
If I would put my best guess out there was about $4 million, which was the swing.
Between those things
where we're in.
Between the things that he was just speaking about.
Yeah.
With, yes. I mean, it,
I'm just
it's easily
a ballpark in my head when
it's
I
easily a
$4
million swing. Yes.
And we were looking at the audit financials. I remember the $4 million sucking in my head.
So those items were spent, and so that those were big ticket things. But then after that, other things do add up. As right, last year we said, okay, we have to make these adjustments now, and so last spring we did, and that's what. And so I know Cassie's about ready to, and I don't want to go any further because I know you got to get the transparency in these next ones. So I want you to just keep on that part, okay?
So, and all of this is leading into the metrics and the data that the state used to analyze our, so there is like an end in mind of discussing that designation. I just want to throw that out there. So the district is required to post quite a few items on our website that are publicly available, which would be our board approved budgets, the financial information FID reports when I submit that annually in October, our collective bargaining agreements, employer-sponsored health care plan information, our audited financial statements, and then there's several other reports that I have to compile annually. So that's just letting you know that. And then I'm going to show the data tool that Mr. Shaw had provided at some point. I don't remember if it was in an email or board briefs with it because it came along with the letter. So the state of Michigan data that they used to designate us on the early warning list was compiled from information that we submit to them, which would be our student count, our revenues and expenditures, and fund balance information as reported in our annual financial information database, and then the REP or Registry of Education Personnel submissions that are done twice yearly by the Human Resources Office. Anything else that they had on there, the state calculated based on that information. And I know this is kind of small. Let me...
So the REP plays in this that Cindy does?
Yes. Sorry. So I did a screenshot of kind of the last 10 years, which I don't think any of us are unaware that our pupil count has been declining. And then our revenues and expenditures have changed greatly over the last 10 years. And if you look at the influx in 21, 22, and 23, and even 24, you can see comparatively from 10 years ago, we were at 56 and 54 million, and we're at 63, 64, 73. And now we're trending back to more what our revenues were at that time.
What's interesting, too, is that the expenditures start exceeding the revenues in 21. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's under before that, but in 21 it's under, and then it's even.
In
and then it starts
in 2017 we used
over expenditures mm-hmm. over revenues mm-hmm. where it didn't previously
right.
do that.
Yeah. And
but that would trigger was.
And right. And that downward trend was part of the reason yeah. that they designated.
And that's where if you go back and you look at that 23 year, mm-hmm. put the football field in there. You got your staffing in there. And so mm-hmm. that's where you go back to those prior years.
Yeah, that one's a million.
Yep. And so mm-hmm. that's where
the
you start to do
like
that. And
the 1.5. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then the next one, we're looking at over 3. And I'm being generous. Math.
Well, if you go across you. Right there,
that's maybe that's where it's I got my 4 million from.
1.2, 1.6.
Because that hits mm-hmm. about 4 million.
Mm-hmm. And then
maybe more.
They calculate some ratios as far as the revenue per pupil and expenditure per pupil, which they take straight our total revenues divided by our number of students. That's not what we're spending only in classrooms. That's everything. That's your maintenance. That's your bus drivers. That's your custodian. That's every expense in the general fund.
It's not sustainable. It's not sustainable.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is why we've made moves to reduce expenditures, because it's not sustainable. And then the changes in the FTEs, and I apologize, I intended on getting with Jill to see if she had the previous manual, but I know some board members had flagged that the administrator number had gone up.
Oh, I did that.
Significantly. However, there was a change a couple of years ago as to what certain positions were considered administrative. And it all depends on what coding that the Human Resources Office uses when they report to REP. So it's not necessarily that we increased administrators necessarily, but some positions that may have been considered instructional or support previously are now considered administrative.
But
it seems like it seems like the, if I'm looking at this from mm-hmm. from a optic standpoint, mm-hmm. teachers seem to be declining and administrators seem to be increasing.
Right.
That's what that's a big picture
right.
I would take away
yeah.
from it.
Well,
I'm not saying that's
nope,
necessarily the fact,
nope.
but I'm looking at it.
Yes.
Big
and
picture,
that's
it.
Right. And
that's a headline.
Right. And I don't disagree that that's the way the data makes it look, but it's not based on the change in how they're requesting things reporting. It's not apples to apples each year because they, my guess would be in 2022-ish is when they, the last time that then 23, it was the new way because there was that big jump from 48 to 54. So it's just not.
Well, then there was 54 to 64.
Right. Yeah.
So, Cindy, I need you tomorrow have Jill take a look back there and what changed mm-hmm. and so that I can buy identify.
Because you would,
yeah.
you would think. Look,
right. And, Cassie, we talked about mm-hmm. this. I do believe it's because, like, we didn't have deans.
Mm-hmm.
We just counted exempt administrators or building administrators that have a CBA with them,
mm-hmm.
like their collective bargaining agreement. We also now have deans.
Yeah.
Into board briefs this week.
Because that would be additional administrators if you're adding deans in, and deans weren't positions
well,
that we.
Well,
the deans.
But it's
always there,
it's positions that we had.
So if
no,
I go
deans,
with.
We go by the gotcha. State guideline for codes.
And this.
They provide them to us.
So they change.
Mm-hmm. We're in 23.
23-ish, yeah. I feel like 22, 23.
Mm-hmm. What they look like in 24 and what they look like in 25 mm-hmm. to show that growth.
Okay.
Because it goes up, it doesn't go down. Yeah.
So the other thing you would think based on that, and these are numbers, so these are data, real numbers.
Right.
So you would think if I am taking this 10 staff out of this category and moving them to this category, this category would be decreased by 10, and this one would be increased by 10, but the data does not support that.
But then if you add the same...
So if it's an adjustment from one category to another, the data doesn't support it.
But that's only part of the story. So then you also have additional positions that were added, say in support, like the RBTs and the BCBAs.
Right.
That's additional support. So while there was that movement, then there was also other increases. So each year is, the staffing is not static, and it changes greatly based on student need.
So would the RBTs be under the parapros and aides category?
I'm not sure if they're reported under parapros or non-instructional.
Because both those, obviously the
parapros. I'm not as well versed as on rep as Jill is by any means. Because the state is very picky of how you report different things.
So one of the things I know, Cindy, is please, on our staffing chart right there, figure out a coding system so that we can, we'll know then that these positions mm-hmm. that are on there, if it's administrator, teacher, parapro, so if it goes to, so it goes into rep, so let's go back to like an RBT. So this building has an RBT. Is an RBT a non-instructional or is it a parapro? So that way, then the board, when they're looking at it, goes, okay, I know that this position is a will fall into that larger number.
So to give you a thing, I think, and I may not be right, but I think that big, huge chart that you gave us at one point mm-hmm. has that broke down on there in those categories.
Right.
They may be.
Not by rep.
Not by rep. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, I was just thinking maybe it was on there. Yeah. When we get to staffing, mm-hmm. hold this thought, because I have questions related to that, what we should be doing staffing.
Yeah.
So hold that thought.
Yeah.
Good.
Mary or Stacy, do you have any questions? So we don't get dominated down here?
We don't want to dominate this side of the aisle.
I was just asking Cassie, but she also said that it might be more of a Cindy Jill question about if our school improvement coaches were ever like reclassified, so they may have been part of that shift from it may have been teacher to admin or support staff to teacher or one of those things.
Right. And I've never analyzed that data of the shifting and holding.
Mm-hmm.
So if that statement follows with the chart that we were just given that starts in 15, so it's a 10-year chart, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then if the categories change that frequently to alter numbers that dramatically, then the statistical historical data we're looking at has no value and it's essentially meaningless, if that statement's true.
Well,
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying that can't be true and this can't be true.
I am providing you what the state used to designate. This is part of the story of what they used to designate us as an early warning for potential fiscal distress. Whether it's valuable or not is their purview as far as how they use the data.
Well, I would think it's valuable.
It is valuable in some aspects. It is valuable in some aspects, but it doesn't tell the numbers don't tell all of the story.
Because 22, 23, 24, and 25, our staffing went up and our student count went down.
And our revenue went down.
And our revenue went down.
Yeah, that's my biggest concern is the overall picture. Not
right.
What category they're in, but, yeah, obviously our staffing is going up and our revenue is going down.
One thing you want to look at.
And student count's going down.
Is your teachers, everyone, 22 to 23. Remember, that was when mm-hmm. we reduced class sizes.
Yeah.
We're not. I'm not suggesting.
Yeah. No, I'm sharing.
I would say the biggest category should be teachers.
But that's what occurred there when you saw that jump in teachers as our focus. And at that point, we're reducing class size.
Yeah, but the teacher count is going down now because our FTE is going down.
But staffing's still going up.
Staffing's still going up.
But the teacher number is going down because they are right-sizing some buildings where we have people retiring. Oh, sorry. I didn't hear that. I apologize.
Yeah, sorry.
And
they've never been right-sized. I mean, they've been operating as they have been, but we have really dug deep and looked at a lot of time spent looking at what our student count is, what our class sizes are, according to our CEA, which we have to follow those. But the problem is some of our buildings have never really been right size in the secondary level primarily, because elementary has always been right size because that's an easy sweep. High school has a lot of different things that they offer, which makes them a little heavier in their staffing.
But again, it's still the, I understand that. But if student count is going down, revenues are going down, and staffing is going up, we're just identifying that those two downward trends and that upward trend can be a bog that can be causing some stress on the system, and that's what we're just looking at. And so I understand what you're saying, the need, but from this standpoint that we're looking at it, that's what, you know what I mean? Yeah. Those are still true statements.
Right,
proportionally, it would all be moving in the same direction.
Right, but I also think that we are starting to see in our student achievement, we're starting to make that, we're at the bottom of the parabola, right? We're starting to make an upward trend. This is another one of those strategies that we've implemented, reducing class size, that may be contributing to that increased student achievement.
If I just look at the rough, this is just a rough calculation. In 2015, if I take the FTE divided by the number of teachers, it's 21.6. So basically average class size. If I do that in 2025, it's 18.9. So it does reflect what we're doing as far as reducing class size.
For teachers.
What was 2015, 21.6, you said?
Is 21.6, and it's 18.9 in 25. So it does reflect what we're doing.
For the teachers.
For the teachers.
Not the rest of the administrators.
The one other shift you're going to see, though, too, everyone, is support staff. The support staff coming out of COVID, that's the other thing you're seeing in here. But I think what we have to, where I've asked for Cindy to do is just really so label out on that staff chart so you know like what positions sit where, and then as we make decisions in the future, that'll where those adjustments then are happening.
You're talking about non-instructional staff?
I'm talking about...
Because they're lower.
Right, I'm talking about...
I mean, those numbers are lower than
like,
what they were.
So there might be five or eight different positions that sit in a non-instructional.
Yeah.
Okay, titles. And that's what I'm asking her to do is...
There's a plethora that's
lay out what positions sit underneath each of these titles so you know, like, okay, when we... If we add or reduce an RBT, well, hey, that's a non-instructional person or that's this.
Yeah. It just makes you wonder, though, is like, Tom, you just calculated the teachers, how that may be impacted. And as Mary said, the instructional maybe shift that we're seeing. But I would struggle to know how the increase of administrators was in alignment.
Well, that's what we're saying is we don't write this minute until she pulls this tomorrow. We didn't increase administrators, okay?
Well, I'm just saying it looks like it.
Correct, but there's some other position in there. It could be now considered a dean, where a dean was a non-instructional before. It could be a dean that sits there. That's what we don't. That she's going to have for you in board briefs tomorrow is what new position, what now falls in that category.
And the parapro number is that so much lower because of they needed to get an associate's degree at one point. What year did that happen?
Oh, that was.
Yeah, that was
way
back. 06.
It was like 104.
Have they been shifted maybe into one of the other categories?
We're trying to figure out why the parapro participation went way down.
Because of the pay.
And some of our aides, our paraprofessionals, part of their day, they're a substitute because they're not highly qualified. So that may be considered non-instructional, and then part of their day, only a portion, they're qualified for a certain thing. And
it's a certificate, right? Yeah. That they you get to do that.
So I think
a degree program or licensed.
So I think if Mrs. Flynn can add some context to what is in each category and bucket, yeah, that would help the conversation.
Okay. Yep. Well,
and I do know
parapro is
right.
Maybe the world's toughest job.
It's not
it's on
easy.
There. It's on there. I mean, I don't know about climbing the high of a height of a cell tower and putting some stuff together, but that life is very, very rough.
Mm-hmm.
With the behavioral mm-hmm. situations that we have.
Well, and the RBTs can help them.
I bet.
And we're working on, we have something ready to roll with our systems if we can only get them to agree more of a tiered system in their group, that they could really get some good training to make more money and be a part of our group. So that's, we've been working with them to do that. But the people that sit in our executive,
more senior.
More senior, and they get more senior. They're making almost $20 an hour, okay, if you're at the top.
Where, yeah, when you're at the bottom.
16.
Mm-hmm. So that's a big shift.
That is a big shift.
Mm-hmm. And then RBTs make between 22 and 25. That's a decent pay.
Yeah.
And as Mr. Shaw and Mrs. Flynn have both alluded to as well, with some of the students that we're serving now, we've had to increase some of those additional supports, like the RBTs, some different kinds of assistance, and they're having different needs than they perhaps did in previous years, which is affecting our staffing model.
Well, there's younger ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, used to it would be, oh my gosh, the middle school was a
mm-hmm. terror ground. No, it's like kindergarten now. No, it's the K.
Mm-hmm.
My wife was a kindergarten teacher. Yeah. My life was horrible for 10 years. Holly's probably listening. Holly, you can hear that.
We do want to give Cindy a few minutes. So, is there any questions for Cassie on this? We got some clarity and going
well
forward
done
here.
Thank you. Thank you.
So,
thank
you, when we do our presentation, we were saying, okay, a request for a spending that we'll share in there, hey, this is in the budget, or this is something we need to add to the budget in the future. At the same time, if we need to spend something, do we have a way to reduce a revenue, or sorry, reduce an expenditure in that same category so it's an offsetting kind of thing?
Cassie, I just want to ask you one question.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm looking at the stock market trend, and I'm saying, if I want Cassie's crystal ball out, we are $2.3 million off, not your, but historical for your trend, is that higher or is that lower?
We typically do have a couple $1 million swing,
okay,
from what we estimate, just because of grant. It's mainly related to the grants and any big projects that we have going on.
Okay.
Because I can't pigeonhole us to say we're only going to spend $50,000 of a grant and oops, we spent $50,500.
Okay.
So that's why we've historically budgeted conservatively, even though we do know that some of that grant money and some of that project will be completed in July, August, September, and so on in the subsequent year.
I just want to know when Cassie says, is it like, you know, Merrill Lynch was at one point? Like, you know. Thank you. Thank you for this back together. Thank you.
All right.
Can we start with questions?
Yeah, so...
No, the questions start there.
No, I just meant for staffing because we're going to run out of time, and these were follow-ups from before.
Yeah. So Cindy's presentation is the same as it's been for the last...
We start there.
So off we go. Okay. Questions for Cindy on staffing, gang?
Nope. Stacy?
Mm-mm.
Nope.
You're not helping me.
Okay. I'll go to Carrie before the two of you. Okay. Then Darla, you're up. You're up.
Huh? Okay, so back in April, we had the discussion on reducing personnel and deans and things like that were included in there. Has that been complete in the plan that was put in place in April? So that's all been done and that's all completed. I'm finishing up my big, huge staffing folder. The other thing that's in here is back in, it was on November 11th at our board meeting, we were talking about, it was actually from October the 14th was the follow-up, re-mentioned again in November. But anyway, I probably should put it on the log, but I just came across it today. It was a request to add clearer cost-benefit view on the staffing report that you do, requesting a new total cost, salary and benefits column, and how prior staffing reductions were reflected in the current budget. And those were things that come up out of that discussion. And I didn't put it on the log because I completely forgot about it, but I came across these notes today.
Say that again.
That's what I was going to ask, yeah.
Yes.
So there was a request for a clear cost-benefit view on your staffing report. You were going to add another column on it. And then it was going to be called total cost, salary, and benefits column. Because we were talking about, do you remember the conversation now? I don't want to take all the time to go through it.
Total cost.
October 14th, if you want to go back and listen to the conversation. And then it was how prior staffing reductions were reflected in the current budget, which were, I believe, the ones I just mentioned from April. And how were they reflective in the budget? And those were the follow-ups on staffing. So I went and looked today. I did not see that on there, so I'm assuming it
so Cassie got missed. Can answer that question, that the staffing, that those changes we made last year.
Well, it was April 25.
But you're asking, how do they are they reflected, for example, are they currently
you're
reflected
talking
in
school
this
year.
Year's budget, or were they already pulled out of this year's budget as an expenditure?
When I built the budget, I reflected those position changes. So those were already removed from the budget that was presented.
Okay. So they were already.
That was already reflected.
So in my mind, that's all done.
Correct.
Let's move forward.
Yes.
Okay,
thank you. But on these, that the whole idea was to be able to follow that, and you said
so
that wouldn't be a problem.
Are you looking at teaching staff, and are you looking at teachers? Are you looking at what are you?
So
at the conversation?
Yeah, it was. I'm almost, if I remember correctly, we have our one document where it has this person resigned or retired, this person replaced, and then what's that total budgetary shift?
Oh, you're saying.
I think it's your staffing update sheet.
Yeah, staffing sheet.
Yeah.
I looked to see if not that.
Not that one.
No.
It's the staffing sheet that comes out in board
rather
meetings.
Rather than us keep asking questions, you said it would be beneficial. You could just put that on it like you do. I ask less staffing questions now since you do that chart. It's true.
Okay. So we just are going to work together and figure out a way because with that, I mean, it comes with the. Almost 40% we add on top of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
But I think just seeing like Joe Smith left at MA10, which is this value, and Jenny Doe is coming in at BA5 at this level, just seeing that difference, I think would be. I don't think they want to get in. I don't want to speak on behalf of the board, but I don't think they necessarily need to see the benefits part. I think just seeing the salary difference between the two
fully loaded costs.
Right.
Yeah, because I think the conversation was,
So a younger teacher comes in, and an older teacher retires, it should be a cost.
And each category had their own standard benefit, so it was the benefit added on.
Benefits might not be a savings.
I'm saying is,
a young teacher with a family that's just starting out compared to a retiree who doesn't have any children on
their. So you're 2% full of fam.
Yeah. And it may be hard initially to know what their benefit cost is, so it may be more conducive to just have the salary amount and just know that this is the salary difference and know that the difference between that would also have a difference in FICA and retirement. The insurance is very person to person.
Also pick which
probably varies from year as well.
It does.
If they had a kid, then it goes up.
Right.
Or it can go right. For some people, they do the math and they're married, and this person carries single at this school, and the other one carries full coverage at their other employer because it works out mathematically.
We all do that.
And they've done that.
Yeah.
Yep. So they're all over the board.
Most people don't have a spouse that's a teacher.
Yeah. Yes.
Choose their insurance.
Believe me.
I'm on the 80-20 rule. For most everybody else, I'm the 80-20.
They are.
But yes. I say, Holly, please.
Yeah. The other thing was...
My husband works in healthcare, so I can relate.
Yes.
We're always, it's always mine.
Yes. I'm not taking the 80-20.
That'd be added, Darla.
During that same period of time, we were talking about the turnover rate and that 50-60% overall is that we talked about monitoring that to ensure we're watching that drop. Because when I looked at the upcoming staffing changes, I'm not sure that that is taking a downward trend at this point in the turnover rate, because edge of staff is included in that as well. So just so we can keep a, hey, we're at 50, we're going down, we can expect this, we can't expect that.
We're showing a positive trend in turnover, which is good.
Yeah, but we talked about it at that. Well, we talked about though at that point in time is breaking it down by department and or by from. So you have your teachers.
I was just looking at.
I think it was mostly teachers is what we were.
Yeah.
Focusing
so we'll.
On.
But
well, no, because we're looking at cost and budgetary items.
Oh,
so
yeah.
For me, I just the overall is beneficial because you can't sustain that rate of turnover. So I'm just looking at an overall number that if we're sitting at say 55%. That we can see that trend starting to drop, and that's because you need that.
Yep.
You've got to have sustainability across the board.
Yeah, we need, but for...
Because it's not, you can't, the cost of hiring is too much money.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if we're looking at cost, if we can reduce that somehow, and you hired, we just hired that person. What was that person's title?
Our recruitment and retention.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are they full-fledged into it?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Yep.
Have you hired someone?
We tentatively have.
Okay.
Yeah.
The problem is the rate of pay has been a very big obstacle, and
I thought that was paying good.
If you're in that ballpark, you want to be paid a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought it was a decent amount.
Great experience. Knows the ins and outs.
If we had someone that we could have really had probably. If we would have paid an additional $30,000.
Additional
$30,000? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Business
development. So what we're trying to do is just get something
but
started.
But for an ROA, for that might be worth it.
It might. But for something we haven't had in the past, though.
Without knowing how well it's going to benefit.
Yeah. We have
to justify that.
Yeah. We had to figure it out because it's a new arena for schools.
Yeah.
A fully new arena. And so we've got to learn that one there. But...
That was it for me.
Okay.
And up until this point, I thought that edge of staff did recruiting. When we went into business with them for our last venture with the customer maintenance group, I was talking to the second person in command, and I said, I cannot believe that your recruiting efforts are not bringing us in candidates. And he said, oh, we're not a recruiter. We do not recruit. I said, how do you do all of this staffing?
Yeah.
And not recruit.
Yeah. Well, you all see right. The signs all over the billboards that say...
Well, they do recruit because...
Yeah, you got the billboards or whatever.
They've got the billboards, they've got
I
the...
Count that as
That's different than recruiting. That's marketing.
That's just marketing.
Marketing and recruiting are two different things.
Yeah. You got CareerBuilder.com or whatever.
The only company to use?
For...
Whatever we're using them for.
So they are the...
they are the company
they're all on,
that
so.
We use for as a county for substitute teachers.
Yeah.
And so but we've added a lot more into
it. So it just works for us to add other things because of that.
Well,
but for civil
for
purpose,
an ROI, is it functioning?
Yes, because of what they charge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even with the rate? Okay.
It's very, very competitive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So with that, there's we'll get those items into
and onto that chart and in the address register.
I didn't
thank
mean
you.
To stop your presentation. You're up.
No, I was.
You got time.
There's a couple things I wanted to say.
Okay.
We are as of today, we received the last status form that we needed for classroom teachers. All of our classrooms are staffed.
Okay.
We've been fighting along the way. We had a couple kindergarten teachers leave us from Custer. We've hired the last of the replacements for those two positions. And the only remaining position that we have at the elementary level right now, it is, and it's a crucial one, is a social, the second social worker for Monroe, for Custer Elementary. Everything else is filled. So that's really, I think that's awesome.
Okay.
But we've got it, I mean, we have a lot of hiring going on, but it's for non-instructional type positions. And we're working to keep that alive and going.
Well, hopefully you don't lose anybody.
Weren't there just four teacher losses?
I'll say that.
Two at Custer and two others?
I know. I know. And throughout, it always drives me nuts. It's the middle of the year.
We lost a teacher to Nashville after the holidays.
Oh, that was on there, right?
Understandable.
I thought there were four on there. Custer, two at Custer, one at Hollywood, and one at Cantrick in October.
Tell me who left.
I don't write names. I just write 10-1 Cantrick, 10-7 Hollywood, 10-17 Custer, and 12-22 Custer.
Who was the one at?
The one at Hollywood, we moved someone from another building.
Waterloo.
No, Waterloo went to Manor, where they added a section.
These were listed as resignations.
And I think somebody from Custer, they collapsed.
That's the only reason I wrote them down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We filled those internally with balancing out some class sizes. Yeah. So we moved a few teachers, two teachers, from buildings where they had lower class sizes to
Waterloo,
fill those openings.
Yeah, one went from Waterloo to Manor, and then one went from Custer to Hollywood, where they were balancing out things.
But then we hired two new.
Because we had those other two that resigned, yes.
Okay. So
they were. I'm picking up what you're laying down.
Okay. Good.
But no, I think staffing is going well. We just on every day. We onboard 2 days a week. We do fingerprinting sometimes every day. Mostly, we try to keep it to a couple days a week. But that's really turned out to be from October 1st through the end of November. We had done over 100 fingerprinting for people.
That's working out pretty well.
It is.
Okay. Good.
Your staff does it?
Our staff does it.
Yeah.
Yes.
How did you used to do it?
We used to do it through the ISD. And then we used to do it through ProMedica 360. Mm-hmm. But we do it cheaper than any of them to make it easier for them. So
it's
they
convenient
can,
too, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to go over to ProMedica.
No. Yeah. And it's really, we've got control. We've had a couple of hires recently that have had what they call a rat back, which means from the time that they were hired until now, something happened and they were arrested for something.
Jeez.
And that is, I think, the benefit of us, when we used to get them all the time and then it kind of like stopped. But I think us doing fingerprints and we're in that daily, they see that there's a lot of activity, they're letting us know what they should.
But stuff could show up that happened 4 or 5 months earlier, could show up 3 months after you hire them. There is sometimes that big of a swing.
Yeah.
There is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
which is why you have to check it on a regular basis, which
and we
is
do.
Beneficial.
Yeah. We do.
Good.
But yeah, so it's going well. Good. I thought I'd have more questions.
I can't believe you.
Any more questions for?
Do you want me to come up with some?
Nope.
Thank you.
No, I won't take a break.
Thanks.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so that completes discussion items. Carrie, do we have any public commentary for? Okay. Then can I get a motion to adjourn?
I move to adjourn.
Do we have support?
Support.
Support.
Show of hands. Okay, that concludes our agenda. The Monroe Public Schools Board of Education work session for Tuesday, December 9th, 2025 is adjourned. The time is 6:44.